Welcome to the Next M podcast. Tech at heart, ignition in mind.
Welcome to the Next M podcast. My name is Lars Peters, and I have Ben Royce with me. He is a lecturer from New York, from the Columbia University. So I have to ask you for your precise title because I'm just going to mix it up.
No worries. I'm a lecturer of applied analytics, a master's program at Columbia University.
We are talking about big data, obviously like a big thing over the last couple of years. What made you choose this one as your scientific topic to deal with every day? What is so interesting about it for you?
I did search for a long time, and I was fascinated by search data. Is that, you know, what people search for is incredibly honest and truthful. That was not a big data set by today's standards. So it was about, if I was going to expand, I was going to go much more into at-scale data. And one of the things that really drew me in was how much we don't analyze. We collect tons, not just all organizations collect tons of data, but they don't do a lot of smart analysis. And that was actually really frustrating for me. So I wanted to spend more and more time finding interesting patterns in data because we finally had that resource available.
So when you started as a researcher, what kind of data did you collect, or what did you did research on?
Yeah, I started with search data, but I've now since done a lot of work with video data. People view videos, when they stop watching them, what's in them. And so we've always had data for the video itself, but we didn't know what was in it. And thanks to machine learning, artificial intelligence, we can now train machines to see and watch video so that they can say, oh, that's that's a car in there, that's a cat, that's a dog, whatever it may be. That's relatively new. And I think that new type of data from the same types of resources that we've had is really fascinating. And we can do all sorts of new analysis and find new insights. And that was really exciting for me.
So, of course, I'm now curious, what kind of insights did you find out about the videos? Just like one or two, maybe?
Sure. One of the things we found when I looked at chocolate ads, I looked at a lot of chocolate ads.
I love chocolate.
It's an easy topic for everyone, right? For some reason, clouds and smoke tend to do very well in chocolate ads.
Oh.
Which was kind of surprising, right?
Yeah, but this would raise exactly the question, why?
Yeah.
Why would that? Do we have an explanation for that?
So this is why I think this is never-ending work, is because I can tell you a lot of what is happening.
Yeah.
The why is still a human endeavor.
Right.
I don't think a machine will ever be able to accurately tell us why, so we do need to test. But you need to have the human intelligence to know, okay, that's interesting, and I need to find out why. And you could, and the good thing is that sort of research is pretty much renewable. Like, that'll never go away.
Okay. So, but is that kind of a question that you could answer with like big data analysis then?
We can get for every one question we answer with big data, there comes three more, right? So it's like a toddler who, when you say something and they say, why, and then you give them the answer and they say, why, they can go on for that for hours, right? And so can we. So it's a wonderful time to be in analytics because there's always enough work to be done.
I can imagine. And probably Excel won't do for those big data and programs like SPSS, those statistical programs that I studied with or worked with, probably won't work there either, will they?
Most problems can probably be solved in a spreadsheet program like Excel. The really, really big data ones do require more computing power. And luckily, in the last few years, our ability to scale up computers is not just speed, but massive scale has what led to a lot of this work. So as we're, the equilibrium between computing power and data available is, it kind of bubbles and they bounce back and forth a little bit. But they're, in general, they're both on the rise. So yeah, it's probably large computing systems or cloud technology that probably is the solution to a lot of those big data problems.
So whoever wants to go into the big data business probably needs to change and learn new things all the time because, as I said, it's just on the rise. So when you are working or teaching at the Columbia University in New York and you have students, where do you start explaining them what big data is and how they can get hold of it how they can manage it?
So I tell them that, most of my classes are not technical, and you'd think they would be, but they're not. And the reason is because there's so much information on the internet that you can literally go and teach yourself. It's just about how much drive you have, how much energy and how much motivation you have, right? And that can be a renewable resource if you get it right. So I tell them, if the technical skills, you should always have a lifelong learning mentality. Once you're out of school, you're not done learning. Right. If I had stopped learning when I finished school, you know, I would have been pretty bad. Right? Yeah, exactly. But I think some people don't know that or weren't, that wasn't reinforced with them. The other thing I tell them is about communications is you can have great technical skills. And actually I've noticed the better your technical skills get, the worse of a communicator you become. And because they don't practice communicating, right? Simple visualizations. Right? You have to make it consumable for everyone, not just other data scientists. And so I think that's really important.
Is that kind of the nerd problem? So that everyone who just digs too deeply just loses contact to the normal people and then...
They lose sight.
Yeah, okay.
And you want them to do that work. You want them to get... We want to get better at this stuff. But I think it's a little bit of mindfulness to say, yes, I'm very, very deep into this data set, or I've spent a lot of time building a system to analyze it. Can you tell me the so what? Mm-hmm. Right, you should always be able to keep your head, you know, feet on the ground and head of the clouds, right? And that's a good thing. But some people really never gets reinforced for them.
And when you are talking to those students or maybe other people who are already working in big data business, do they get your point and do they try to improve on to communicate better?
They get feedback and that tells them like they'll say like, oh, I did this work and no one really appreciated it. And when I see it, I think, that work, that's great work. Good job. It looks, to a non-technical person, it'll look like an advanced science fair project, right? And that's so cool. Disheartening and damaging to a data scientist or an analyst because it's just like, oh, you don't get it. And my argument back to that is be more empathetic and say, not everyone is technical, right? Most people will never be as technical as you. That's good. That means you're extra technical. That means you've acquired a skill. But you need to have empathy for your audience and make it consumable. And that's as simple as data visualization, which I don't think is emphasized enough. If you're lucky, you'll have a boss that's very direct with you that will say, look, this isn't working. I'm sure it's great work, but can you make it real for me? And that's hard to hear, but it's actually really important. It's as important as engineers have learned this. The interface is the product to most people, not the science behind it. You know, the way the car looks is the car. It doesn't matter if it's got an aluminum engine or you know, it's got some sort of special poly whatever inside the engine. No one cares. What does it look like? And that's reality.
Yeah. And at the same time, there is a bigger demand of just the people who are working with big data, I assume, right? So is it kind of an interesting field or is it like high wages you can expect there?
There's a couple things. One is there is a shortage of data scientists. We know that. And there's a lot of data scientists coming out of education, self-trained ones too, which is totally fine. Most of my data science education has been self-learned, right? The shortage is real, which means that's a good place to be. I teach it because I want them to be even better and garner higher wages. The real shortage is in people who can manage data scientists. There's an even bigger shortage there. Leaders in data science and managers are probably the most scarce thing. And I don't even think people are aware of how bad that is because the questions that I get from students and other data scientists are not technical questions. They're what industry should I go into? Because no one's told them which one is the best or even suggested or given them a hint, right?
So which one is it then?
Advertising, no question. Advertising's
why?
The best.
Because we need to know more about the consumers? Is it that? Yeah,
there's a human element, right? Like learning how people behave or how they respond to things, I think is good and we have a better understanding of humanity. Yes, we use it for advertising in my academic research, but two is that it's actually sort of rewarding in different ways. For example, compared to finance, you'll do a lot of the same types of technical work in advertising and finance. The difference is in advertising, you can point to something and show your mother what you did. And in finance, you can't usually do that. And if you can, it's probably a violation of some agreement. So yeah, I argue that advertising is more fun. And I think it's the best application. A number of leading data scientists and researchers have said that the most lucrative area for artificial intelligence is advertising.
Okay.
I think Andrew Ng said that. And he's led some of the best research out there. We've done 1% of what we could possibly do.
Okay.
It's still very early.
And is there any difference between different nations, like around the globe, that there are countries who are more embracing this new technology or the new abilities?
Totally. We just actually did a survey with M Science. And they asked them, like, who do you think is leading the development of artificial intelligence? And the surveyed German population said Japan, U.S., and then China. When I asked my students the exact same question, they said U.S., China, Japan, right? And that's interesting only because about 85% of them are originally from China. So that's one of the and that's indicative of what's happening. So a lot of the research in the U.S. is done on a private level. Major, okay. You know, tech companies researching this stuff. Google has called itself an AI-first company, right? That is literally driving everything. Versus the EU model is sort of a hybrid, some private research, a lot of foundation, but a lot of sponsorship from the EU, like in terms of funding, right? Like they're you know, essentially fueling it more and more. And we're seeing a lot of great research out of the UK, in Germany as well. The French tech sector has really risen in the last few years.
Okay.
But China, that is where you're seeing the most investment. The scale of it is unprecedented. Which is really interesting to see, but we're getting to the, we haven't even seen a lot of the fruits of that yet, but they have really put their bets on artificial intelligence in terms of their research and their funding.
Yeah, and also what you said, that 85% of your students are from China, you just mentioned that.
Yeah.
So is that something that we are just not aware of what's happening in China, so that we are just too much focusing on ourselves, on the Western world, and maybe not taking really into what's happening in China?
I would argue there's a bubble in the Western world. I'd argue there's a bubble inside that bubble called the United States, and I'd argue there's a bubble inside the bubble called New York in my world, or in Silicon Valley. They have their own bubbles. Yeah. You know, so yes, there's that. That is a real thing. But it's a different problem. Like the growth rate of China's economy and their appreciation for technology is a great premise. I think we need to focus on making sure we have a global standard for code of conduct, being ethical, and doing things for the right reasons, right? And there's lots of ways to do that. And that's one of the reasons I started teaching, was because I didn't want to complain about, you know, analysts not being good communicators or data scientists doing things they shouldn't. I wanted to be part of the solution.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of things we can do within the space to make sure that this is a technology that is really helps people in the end.
You mentioned the ethical point of view, and especially in Germany, when it comes to only the word data, so people are just like, oh, stop it, and I want to keep the data for myself. Is maybe that also a reason why China is so much, more, not developed, but so much more open to this opportunities there are than we are in Germany, that because we are too concerned about what's happening with our data, we want the data protection and security?
Sure. I mean, everyone, it's not just Europe or Germany. It's the U.S. There are people concerned about privacy, ownership, or at least transparency, at the least. Show me what's being done. I don't know what the attitude difference is, but I find that my students are just as concerned on a personal level. They want to make sure, and these are the people who are doing or training to become those future people.
Right.
They're concerned about it too, which is good. We have a global sense of what is expected. And there's going to be variance from country to country, even from town to town, I'm sure. But they're just as concerned. They tend to be more concerned about the industrialization of these technologies and making sure that they're going to be okay, which is kind of ironic, right?
Yeah, but it should work for them as well.
Yeah.
So hopefully. So as the last question, or what would you recommend? Like if there's anyone now getting in the fingertips, oh, maybe I should try my luck in big data.
Yeah.
What would you give for suggestion? What you should keep in mind? What should you focus on?
Totally. I mean, you could start the simplest, if you want to talk about skills, learning SQL, and you can learn this stuff on YouTube. You can learn this stuff on lynda.com or edX or Coursera. There are like these open, massive learning platforms. Well, they'll teach you all the basic skills. The one thing I would keep in mind is, one, stay with it. A lot of people fall out because the learning curve is quite steep.
Okay.
That's not a bad thing necessarily, but it is hard to get over. And two, the other thing is, this area is specializing. So I wouldn't just do big data in general. I would pick something specific and move towards that. So that might be natural language processing, where you're doing text mining. It might be prediction with machine learning. It might be churn analysis, because we're seeing that is sort of specialization is happening. So I would pick something that's of interest to you. I happen to like machine learning for video. I think that's having machines watch something, I think, is super cool.
Yeah.
It's just genuinely interesting to me. But natural language processing is probably my second favorite, where machines start reading text and extrapolating
and
information.
And then they're learning it.
Right. So it's not just big data. It's like, I went to these two things. And if you ask me about, you know, prediction, honestly, I wouldn't be fluent, right? Because I focused a little bit. So having a focus or a problem to solve, I think, is a really good way to start.
Okay. Thank you for those insights.
No, thank you.
Ben Royce, pleasure talking to you. Yeah.